So let's open up to Chof Ches Amid Beis, and we'll count up from the bottom six lines. The Mishnah records a machlokes regarding Sone and Ohev. And Rabbi Yehuda's machvir, and he says that a Sone and an Ohev are posul li edus. You cannot trust their testimony. That's one thing. And then we have another issue that we have to address, and that's the case of Krovim Shenisrachaku. That's also an issue in our Mishnah, and that means that at one point they were related to each other, let's say a son-in-law, but then the daughter died, so he's no longer his son-in-law. Can he testify in a court of law? So we take a look back for a moment at the Mishnah. That's on Daf Chav Zayin Amid Beis.
That could be from Ahava, maybe, because if he divorced it, it came out from Sila.
If there was no, let's say there was no divorce, and the question is whether they had children together before they went. So if you take a look at the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afilu Mesa Bito, V'yeshlo Bonavimena, Hareze Korov. That even though his daughter died, and technically his son-in-law is not his son-in-law anymore, but nevertheless, since they had children together, he's still a Korov. And then Rabbi Yehuda goes on to say that a Oev Asone is also Pasul Li'edus, and an Oev is a Shushvinon, we'll see exactly what that means, and the Sone is that they didn't speak out of some altercation, some anger for three days. But the Chachamim in the Mishnah reject Rabbi Yehuda. They say to Rabbi Yehuda, Lo nechshedu Yisrael kach. We're not going to suspect that an Oev or a Sone is going to testify false. Omer Rav Tanchum, Omer Rabbi Tavla, Omer Rabbi Buna, Omer Rav, Halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda. We paskin like Rabbi Yehuda in this matter, and that means that if the daughter dies, the son-in-law is still posul yedus, and we're going to see exactly how that impacts in the case of Oe Vesone as well. Provided they had children together. So what does this mean that halach is Rabbi Yehuda Boketov, and that means lechumra, that since they had children together, he still is considered a korov and his posul, even though his daughter died. However, Rav Am Rav Nachman ain halach k'Rav Yehuda. V'chein Amar Rav Bar Brachon Amar Rav Yochanan ain halach k'Rav Yehuda. We don't paskin like Yehuda, which means that even if the son-in-law has children, meaning the father-in-law is a grandfather of these children, nevertheless, he is kosher lodu lahaid. He can testify on his son-in-law. Ika demasli le lahad Rabba bar Bachana aha. We have another version of the statement of Rabba in the name of Rabbi Yochanan in a different context, not in the context of Korov and Israchek. Ezu dorash Rabbi Yosi Aglili. Rabbi Yosi Aglili darshened the following pasuk. Okay, this is a pasuk in Dvarim, and it says, "Uvasel akonim halavim velashofet asheriyah bayom mahem." In Parshas Shoftim, it says that if there's some sort of a question in the law, and in the lower courts they weren't able to come to any decision, they go to the highest court, which is in the Mokom Asher Yivchar Hashem, which is the Lishkas HaGozis, that's the Bezin HaGodol. Now, it's very strange. It says, Asher Yiyah Bayomim Mahem, as if to say you go to the judges that are alive and well in that generation. V'chisal al daitcha shodom holech etzel shofit shaloha yabayomav. He's not going to be able to take a time machine and go back to a Bezdin of yesteryear or forwards to a Bezdin in the future. Ella ze shahaya karov v'nisrachek. But rather the Torah is coming to include the case of a karov v'nisrachek, that if a father-in-law wants to testify on behalf or regarding his son-in-law after his daughter passed away, then that's okay. And the edus qualifies, and not only that, we go even a step further, he can even be a judge in this case for his ex-son-in-law. That's the sheet of Rabbi Yossi Haglili. On that statement of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, Omar Rabba Barbachanam, Rabbi Yochanan, Halocha Ki Rabbi Yossi Haglili, we paskin like Rabbi Yossi Haglili. So in other words, from Rabbi Yossi Haglili, we see that we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda and Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda and Mishnah qualifies, and he says that it's not always true that you're kosher for your son-in-law because he was nisrachik, he's no longer related to you. And on that we have the sheet of the Chachamim, the sheet of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, and we have a whole bunch of poskim in the Amoraim that rejected Rabbi Yehuda, and they accepted the sheet of the Chacham, the sheet of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, and we can be machshir the Edim and the Dayon.
Even though
there are grandchildren through that marriage.
But here we're mixing up Eidut and judges.
No, the Gemara wants to say that we can go even a step further. The original Machlokas recorded at Mishnah was about Eidus. Rabbi Yossi Haglili in his Drasha, and that's Rabbi Yochanan Paskin like him, was addressing the case of Dayonis, meaning not only is the father-in-law kosher to testify about his son-in-law now that his daughter died, but even more so, he can serve as a judge. We're going to soon see that the standards for judgment, as far as Oy Vesone, which is our next sugya, are even greater and more demanding than as far as Avis is concerned. So the Gemara wants to point out that Rabbi Yochanan, when he paskined here this halacha, he wasn't paskining like the Chacham against Rabbi Yehuda in the case of Edom alone, but he went even a step further. He paskined like Rabbi Yossi Haglili that even in the case of judges, we can qualify the judges after the death of the daughter, as we discussed earlier, because it says Asher Yeh Bayom Mahem, and if that's true for judges, then how much more so would it be true for witnesses? Now the Gemara tells a story, and the cute thing about this story is that you get one impression when you start the story, and then you see that the punchline of the story completely changes the story. It's very interesting. What was the story? Bnei Chamua Demar Ukva. Okay, now Chamua de Mar Ukva means Mar Ukva's father-in-law. And now we're talking about the sons of Mar Ukva's father-in-law. Krovim v'nisrachaku hava. This was a case of Krovim v'nisrachaku, those they were once related, and then Mar Ukva's wife died. And if Mar Ukva's wife died, therefore he's no longer related to his father-in-law. And if he's not related to his father-in-law after his wife's death, then he's not related to his father-in-law's children. And therefore, when they came in front of Mar Ukva for a judgment, Mar Ukva, if you hold the Krovim Shenisrachaku Aksherim, he could have presided on the Bezdin. And Osul Kamei Ledina, Amar Lahu Psilna Lahu Ledina. Mar Ukva, to their surprise, said that I'm not Kosher Ledun, I'm Posel Ledun. Amar Ulei, so they were big Talmidei Chacham. They said to him, my Daitcha, apparently, why are you disqualifying yourself, Kirab Yehuda? You're passing like a Yehuda. That even Krovim Shenisrachku, because they left children, is they remain Psulim. Anan my sinan igarata mimarofa. We're carrying a letter from Eretz Yisrael, and in that letter, the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael wrote, "Ein halacha k'Rav Yehuda," that we don't paskin like Rav Yehuda. So again, this is what I call stage one of the story. At this point, we're under the impression that the reason Mar Ukva excluded himself from judgment is because they were Krovim way back when, and even though now the Nisrachku, we have to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. So Gemara says, no, that wasn't the reason why Mar Ukva disqualified himself. Amar Lahu, now he reveals the true reason why he said that I'm posel adin. Otu bekaba dekire idabkana bechu. Okay, now literally what this translates is, do you think I was glued to you like wax? Wax has that hadbaka, you know, idbaka. In other words, do you think that once I married your sister, therefore from now on, I'm pasul adun? I didn't say that I was, you know, I was misquoted when I was quoted as saying that I disqualified myself as a judge. There was another reason why I didn't want to judge this case. El mishum de lo tzaisisu dina. That I'm afraid that because of our close relationship, we know each other for such a long time, that you're not going to respect or treat my verdict with awe and accept the decision and implement the decision. So in other words, technically, Mar Ukva could have been the judge after his wife died. Right?
He doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda.
He doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. He agrees. They didn't really have to pull out the letter from Mar Rava from Eretz Yisrael to convince Mar Ukva that technically speaking, he's kosher ladun. Correct? But the reason why he excluded himself is because he was afraid that a situation would arise in which they wouldn't accept his decision. Meaning, even if he decided that they have to pay, if they lose the case, they wouldn't be so inclined to respect that decision with the sense of awe that normally when, you know, when a judge hands down a decision, you have to treat it very seriously. But they were like good old buddies, and they know each other for such a long time, and therefore he was afraid that they wouldn't accept the din. So he said, you know what, go find yourself a different bestin. Yeah, David?
It just seems so hard for someone to be able to be a judge. There's so many different, you know, things that get disqualified. In this case, he's kosher, he's a sage, he's respected, but he's friends with the other people, so he feels like his opinion wouldn't be respected. It seems to be a very, very, very stringent condition.
I would agree with you, David, that it could be that if there were no other possibilities, there was no other Bezdin in town, Mar Ukva would have taken it upon himself to sit on the Bezdin. But I think the impression you get is that this was an extra chumrah that he accepted upon himself. Go find yourself another Bezdin. And now we get to the issue of Ohev and Sone. So the Mishnah says, what is an Ohev?
So I have been practically with them. There have been cases where they listen to me and another doctor comes along and they listen and I say, now I've been working on you all these years, why don't you listen to me? Because they're too friendly with him, right? You got used to them and they got used to you, and they don't treat you with that awe because they know you for so long.
And it's really true that amongst the family members, it's very hard to get that kind of relationship of awe when you know each other so well and for such a long period of time. You know, the chief rabbi in his own family is just Abba or Saba, you know. And then he goes out and everybody treats him with awe and respect. Okay, so that's the story. His brothers-in-law, and now we move on to Ohev. Now, the Mishnah says that how do you define an Ohev? That there's such a close relationship that we cannot trust his testimony. And the Mishnah says, that shushvinan. Shushvinan, as we discussed yesterday, are those people that accompany the chassan and kala after the wedding. V'kama. How long is he considered a shushvinan? And it's very interesting, the Gemara understands the Mishnah in very technical terms. It's not like, well, Shushvinan is just a Gili Milsit, it only indicates what a close relationship they have, and therefore he cannot be objective in his testimony. But rather, no, it's a technical status called the Shushvinan. And there are various dinim that apply to Shushvinan. For example, if a Shushvinan shows up in Tefillah, then we don't say Tachnun. And I mentioned yesterday that a Shushvinan is potter from Sukkah. So Shushvinan is really a technical term. So the Gemara wants to know how long, at least as far as Avis is concerned, do you call someone Eshu Shvina, and he maintains that status. This makes absolute sense. There are 7 days after the wedding they celebrate, and the din of the Shushvinan is that he should accompany them for all 7 days. And during those 7 days, they're parted from Sukkah, because the Sukkah confines the Simcha.
He wouldn't be allowed to be a witness.
And for those 7 days, he can't be a witness, according to the Tanakhama. Again, we're not up to the Chachamim yet, but. But now the Gemara quotes Rava, and Rava is quoted as saying, "Afilu miyom rishon v'yelach." The only status of psul edus that the Mishnah raises as a possibility, considers, is only on the first day itself, the day of the wedding. And on that day, the shushvinon psul, he's not qualified to testify again, according to that mandi omar. Now, there are special dinim on the first day. For example, if there's a conflict between Simcha and Avelus, then certainly on the first day, which is considered the epitome, you know, the apex of Simcha, there would be no Avelus. The issue is whether or not Avelus could be chal later on during the balance of the 7 days of Mishteh. But the first day is very profound. In fact, even in second marriages, the first day of the Shivas Yemei Mishta has a special status that doesn't necessarily apply to the rest of the 7 days. Again, there are many different dinim here. You have to learn a sugi ksubas, the third day, the first 3 days, but the first day is always considered Yom Simchasi, Yom Chasunasi, has a special status. Okay, we're going to come back to talk about an Ohev in just a minute, but first we want to talk about a Sone. Sone Kol Shel Dibra, they haven't spoken to each other for 3 days consecutively. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa. Now this Braisa is darshaning a Pasuk at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, which addresses the case of a Rotzeach, or Otzeach B'Shogeg, if I remember correctly. I don't have a Chumash in front of me. For who lo oyev lo? When does a Rotzeach B'Shogeg go into Ir Miklot? Meaning that we assume he killed inadvertently. There was no intention to murder. That's because the Torah says, who lo oyev lo? He's not an oyev. He's not an enemy. And then it says Ye'idenu. So for this we have to understand that the Gemara, just 1 second, it says the following. He in footnote number 4, you'll see he brings the whole pasuk. In Befeta below Eva Hadofo, so there was no hatred between them and he killed him. Oh Hishlechol of Kol Kli Vahu Lo Oyev Lo Velo Mevakesh Ra'aso. And then the Torah goes on to say that he is a Rotzeach B'Shogeg, and he goes into, he runs to the Ir HaMiklot, which protects him. Now, this Pasuk is not referring to Edim. It's referring to Rotzchim B'Shogeg. So he writes here in the footnote, in the name of Rashi, that the Torah had repeated this law many, many different times. In other words, this is not the only time that the Torah dedicates itself to the parasha of Rotzeach B'Shogeg. And therefore, the Gemara feels that it could darshan this pasuk, v'hu lo oyev lo, in a different context. Ye'idenu, in the context of testimony. When is a person valid and when does he qualify to testify? That's because lo oyev lo, he's not an enemy of his. V'lo mevakesh ra'aso. Now, in this context, we're talking about saving the rotzeach from the gol adam. Correct? We want to judge him in such a way that maybe we can protect him against the gol adam. And why is that? Because lo mevakesh rahaso. Because the pasuk says that he doesn't look to try to destroy him or damage him or anyway. And then the Gemara says that he is kosher le'edus uledayonus. So in other words, when the Torah says v'shavtu ha'eda, which means that he can serve as a judge, the Torah is saying that who could serve as a judge? Anyone who fits this description of number one, lo oyev lo, and number two, lo mevakesh ra'aso. That since they're not enemies, and they don't harbor any sort of enmity, therefore we can assume that he's qualified as, number one, a witness, or even beyond that, even as a judge. Now, the flip side of this is going to be oyev lo, that an oyev cannot serve as a judge, and presumably, again, this is going to be an issue, but if he cannot serve as a judge, then he cannot serve as a witness. So the Gemara says, Ashkechan sone oyev minolan. Okay, fine. You've darshan this pasuk in the parasha of Rotzeach B'Shogeg to derive the conclusion that an oyev, an enemy, is disqualified as a witness and as a judge. But how do you know an oyev is? And it's interesting, at this point the Gemara is not willing to say svara, you know, that logically if an oyev is disqualified, because he's not going to be objective, so too an oyev should be disqualified. At this point the Gemara is working on a very technical level. There's something called an oyev, there's something called an oyev, and we have to know in which case is he disqualified. So the Gemara answers, Kari Bei Hachi. Let's go back to the pasuk. V'hu lo oyev lo, v'lo oyev lo. In other words, since this pasuk, as we said before, is superfluous, because elsewhere the Torah says that they're not oyevim, so let's read it this way. Because whenever you have a drasha, you try to squeeze out of the drasha whatever you can, the maximum. And we'll read it lo oyev lo. Now again, if you look at the pasuk, it says v'hu lo oyev lo. And aleph vav, with a vase at the end, in the middle there's a yud. But you can substitute the hey for the yud. Now again, I wouldn't say that as a general rule, you know, we could allow for such a drasha and take a word and rewrite it in order to come to some halachic conclusion. But in this case, since the pasuk is completely superfluous, and as we said before, we want to take it on every level and squeeze it out, maximize that drasha, so we're going to say that let's read it oyev, because that's what it says, to exclude an enemy. And number two, let's read it as ohev, and to exclude a friend. Ye'idenu. And then he's not an oyev or an ohev, then he can testify on his behalf. So it means that the pasuk has a double meaning to it. It's referring both to an enemy and a friend. So the Gemara says the following. V'lo mevakesh ra'aso. Now we go to the next part of the pasuk, and it says that he's not seeking to undermine him and destroy him. V'lo tovaso. And we're going to read it as if it says that he's not interested in his benefit because he's not an oyev. And then it says, Yedinenu. The Gemara says that in such a case he can serve as a judge because he doesn't have neither hatred, that's called Mevakesh Raso, nor the flip side, V'lo L'Tovaso. So it's unbelievable that at this point the Gemara is suggesting that we're going to read this Pasuk in two ways. Number one, Oyev, which is what it says, as I state in Pasuk, and number two, we're going to read it Ohev, as if it said Ohev. And then we're going to darshan it the following way. That if it's lo ohev, then ye'idenu, then he can testify. And if it's lo mevakesh tovaso, then ye'idenu, he can judge him. So the Gemara is not happy about this. Midei ohev ksiv. You know, if you have an extra pasuk and you want to derive a ribui, that's fine. But to rewrite the entire pasuk from beginning to end as if it said ohev, and not oyev, and derive two laws from this. Number one, that an oev is posel yedus, and number two, that an oev is posel adun, that the Gemara is not willing to do. Ella, but rather, let's go back to our original question. Svarahu. Maybe there's some logic here. If it says vahulo oyev lo, why is an oyev posel liedus uledayonis? Oyev my time, mishum demarachke daite, because he's not going to see things objectively, but rather he's going to try to twist things against his oyev. Against his oyev. If that be the case, let's flip it around the other way. Oyev nami mekarva daite. If he loves him, then he's going to see things in his favor, and therefore he's going to testify in his favor.
So the Gemara is taking the pasuk, which is talking about oyev, and working out a svara, a reason, right, and then using the opposite reason for an oyev.
Correct. So it's a three-step process. Process number one is that the pasuk says you're only kosher because you're a low oyev, implying that if you're an oyev, you're posel. Process number two is to ask the question, well, why did the Torah exclude an oyev? And once we come to that answer, by svara, to extend it to an oyev.
The only problem is it says, after lecha kumocha, you should be loving everybody. This.
But everybody means both this baldin and another baldin. That's the equal ava that you're required to have for everyone. So in that case, we're not going to say that a person is going to falsify his testimony in favor of one person. He loves both of them. He loves Reuven, he loves Shimon. But in a case where he has a close friendship to such an extent that he's the Shushvinon of Reuven, that extra ava is going to cause him to see things in favor of his ohev.
You're saying a person's
got
to be completely
neutral. That's the sheet. Again, we don't paskin like this. This is all. No, we're not going to paskin like this, as we'll see in a minute.
Everybody has an agenda,
right? Correct, because ultimately, we're not going to suspect a Jew to falsify his testimony simply out of a state of av. Okay, so now we go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah back on Chav Zayin says that we don't accept this sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Correct? Let's just read the Mishnah again, just to make sure that we have the Mishnah down. Here's the Mishnah on Chav Zayin Amud Beis. Bless you. Amru Lo, the last line in the Mishnah, Lo Nechshedu Yisrael Al Kach. We're not going to suspect a Jew that because of this Ava, because of this Ava, he's going to testify falsely. Now, if you have to remember, we pointed out, I think it was yesterday, that Rashi, on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Beis, about four lines up from the bottom, he is Avol Bedin, as far as judgment is concerned, Modu Le Rabbanon De Posolo Ladun. In other words, Rashi's saying that the machlokas between the Chacham and Rabbi Yud is limited to the question of Eidus, but as far as Dayonis is concerned, even the Chachamim agreed that there's no way you can qualify an Ohev or an Oyev. That's what I mentioned to you before, that the standards for qualifying a judge are that much greater than they are for testimony. And we'll try to explain that in just a minute. I just wanted to read a few more lines of the Gemara, and then we'll come back and try to explain why the standards for Dayonis are that much more demanding. Now the Gemara turns around for Rabbanon. The Rabbanon, who maintain that there is kashrus liedus, even an oyev and a sone, is high. What do they do with this pasuk lo oyev lo velo mevakesh ra'aso? My darshi be. After all, we pointed out earlier that this pasuk is superfluous. And it seems that velo oyev lo is referring to testimony. And velo mevakesh ra'aso, as I said before, is referring to judgment. So we have two psukim, and both restrict respectively, one in the case of Eidus, one in the case of Dayonus, that it's got to be lo oyev, lo oyev lo, lo mevakish ra'aso. So since we have two psukim, one pasuk is going to have to be setting the standards for edus. How can the Chacham therefore say that an oyev is kosher li edus? So the Gemara answers chad li dayon, that we're not going to use this pasuk for testimony at all. One pasuk is going to be referring to judgment, and now the Gemara is going to say, what do we do with the second pasuk? So before we get to that question, what do we do with the second pasuk? Let's just point out that Rashi on the Mishnah that we just saw on Chaf Zayin Amid Beis is basing himself on this Gemara here, Chad L'daya, meaning that even the Chachamim who qualify an Oyev, an enemy, for testimony, they agree that he's disqualified for judgment. Why is that so? So in the note here, he quotes the Yad Ramah. The Yad Ramah says the following, that in the case of judgment, it's not enough to say, well, the halacha requires me to be totally objective. That's not enough, because the responsibility that falls on the shoulders of the judge goes beyond. What do I mean it goes beyond? It enters into the inner mechanism of a person, his intellect, his emotions. Why? Because the judge is obligated not just to hear the case and look up in Shulchan Aruch, well, what does it say? How do you decide the case? You know, he says, Yechayev, and he denies it, and this and that, and what's the halacha? No, it's much more than that. The judge has to enter into an analysis of the nuances of the case. Every case is different. And he has to judge the person and his claim and the counterclaims. Every single nuance of the case has to play a role as the dayan is mizbonein. I don't know how you say that in English. You know, he contemplates and he profoundly analyzes all the factors and takes them into consideration till he can finally come to a decision. We're going to see later on that in many cases the dayanim raise their hands in the air and they said, I can't come to any decision. I don't have... Why can't you come to a decision? I mean, the halacha addresses and guides you, gives you the guidelines. No. The answer is because it's much more than just dry and cut and technical. So the Chachamim say that an ohev or an oyev, because of their enmity or their close relationship, is not capable of being totally objective, weighing each claim in the same way. You know, he has a natural tendency towards one of the two Bali Din, and therefore when he analyzes the nuances of the way, the reflections, the innuendos, and the various dimensions of the case, he's not going to come to a clear-cut, objective decision. In the case of Edus, on the other hand, it's much easier, in a sense. What the Edim have to do is, they have to report exactly what they saw, without falsifying. That they can do. Even an Oyev, according to the Chachamim, they are capable of testifying in an objective way.
Well, they don't have to come to conclusions.
They don't have to draw any conclusions. They don't have to look at nuances or whatever. You know, Reuven did this, he borrowed money, he wore a red shirt, he wore a white shirt. You know, don't give me any interpretations. Don't give me any of your subjective perception.
So therefore it would be wrong for a judge to say to a witness, do you think he was going to do the following? You can't ask him for his opinion. You should just say, what did you see?
Who, a judge?
Yeah.
No. We're saying that a judge has to delve...
You can't say to a witness.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you think that he was going to do that? He took a knife in his hand. Do you think he was going to stab him?
Right. You know, I'm not asking for your interpretation of the facts. Just bring me the cold facts.
I wonder if that's a local advice today.
I don't know, Doc. I think you're right. That... Let's go back to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda for a minute. Again, even though we paskin like Rabbanon, I don't know exactly why the Rabbanon have a problem with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda maintains that even as far as one's perception of reality, you are affected by your emotional state. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda disqualifies an Oev and an Oev even for Eidus. And I heard from my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik once that an Eved is Pasul Yedus. Why? So Rav Soloveitchik, in a philosophical sense, again, we don't usually answer those kind of questions. The Torah says that an Eved is Pasul Yedus. But Rav Soloveitchik once, when he was talking about Avodah Mayinu L'Farav Mitzrayim, he wanted to explain what it means to be an Eved. He says that an Eved doesn't see things objectively. He sees things through the perception of his master. He is totally mishubad, you know, he's totally oppressed by his master, and he doesn't have any opinions of his own. And in that lecture, I remember Rav Soloveitchik insisted that only a free person who develops his own opinions, and he sees reality in a very subjective way, paradoxically, he's kasher l'yedus. But an Eved who doesn't see things, he doesn't see things with his own personality, with his own depth of soul, because he's totally given up to someone else. He has no mind of his own. He cannot testify. Which I think would reflect the shita of Rabbi Yehudah. But again, I went off a little bit on a tangent. As you can see, it's a massive daf. And believe it or not, I honestly hope that we can finish this daf by minyan time. So I know you think I'm crazy because it's not even a havamina, but the idach. Okay, remember there were two psukim here. There was lo oyev lo, and then eino mevake lo mevake shro also. Kedisanya, that we need for a different halacha that we learn in a brisa. Omer Rav Yosi b'Rav Yehuda v'hu lo oyev lo v'lo mevakeish ra'asa. Why did the Torah repeat itself? What are the extra pasuk here? Mikan l'shnei talmidei chacham she'sonim zedzeh she'ein yoshvim b'din echad. So this pasuk is addressing the case of Dayonus, but there are two parts to the pasuk, and each part tells me a different halach about who qualifies for judgment. One pasuk v'hu lo oyev lo tells me that if he's an oyev, he doesn't qualify for judgment, as we discussed earlier, and even the chachamim agree. The second part of the pasuk lo mevakish ra'aso is not for witnesses according to the chacham, but rather another din in Dayonus, that the Dayonim have to work together as a team. And if the amongst that team there are two scholars that unfortunately harbor an enmity for each other, then ein yoshvim bedin ke'echad. It means it's very difficult for a dayan to judge when another judge who he hates is on the court, is on the bench, as we say, because if that judge expresses a view, an opinion, then it's very hard for that judge to see things, the other judge to see things objectively. He may be inclined to disagree with the other judge simply because of that emotional feeling, that anger that he harbors against him. You know, it's like sometimes you have, even in learning, you know, you find sometimes there are people who will always argue with you. You know, whatever you say, they'll say fakert. The opposite is true. And why? Because that's a personality clash. He points out in the footnote, in the name of the Yad Ramah, it works in the opposite way as well. If the two Talmidei Chacham are good friends, that Shushvinon, notice if we work together as a court, okay, we have a relationship, but it's not a close, intimate friendship. If it becomes a close, intimate friendship, then once again, it's very hard for a judge to be objective when he hears the opinion of his close friend. Each judge has to be totally free when he comes to judge. Now we start the Mishnah. Ketzad bodkim es ha'ed. The Mishnah wants to address the question about the procedure for testimony. And the Mishnah says the following. There are many, many different aspects of procedure, procedural halachic requirements regarding Kabbalah's Eidus. Number one, Hayamachnisin oson lecheder uma'aymim aleihem. Okay, what we have to do is we have to scare them. We have to say something to the Edim about the serious nature and the repercussions if Chas Shalom they perjure themselves in Edus. And we have to really hit them with fire and brimstone. The Gemara is going to have a whole sugya now exactly how we achieve this goal. What do we do to Ma'ayim Aleim, to scare them? Umotzien es kol adam mi bachutz. At the moment of Kabbalah's Eidus, It's just the Edim and the Dayanim alone. We don't want any other people that might in any way influence the Kabbalist Edus, and certainly not the Bali Dinim. The Bali Dinim are left outside. Umeshairin es hagadol shebahem. And what we do is, just 1 second. Oh, so he says here in the name of the Tosfos Yontif that what the Mishnah is trying to tell us is that each testimony of each respective witness is given privately. So again, first we gather the Edom together and we spook them out. That's called Ma'ayim Aleihem. And then, when we're ready for the actual testimony, we take them one by one. Each witness is going to testify, because again, we're going to want to compare and contrast the testimony of the two witnesses. So we don't want them each to hear the formulation of the testimony. And the Mishnah says we start with the Gadol Shebehen, so we'll give cover to the more prominent of the two witnesses. The Omrim Lo, we say to him, Emor, tell us, Heichata Yodea Shezeh Chayev Lezeh. How do you know? No, it's even before they testify, they are brought into the case by one of the two litigants. So let's say, for example, in this case, the Malva brings two witnesses to testify that the Lova owes him money. And immediately, with the first witness, the judges ask him, tell us how you know that he's Chayev. Im Omar, if he says, Hu Omar Li Shani Chayev Lo, I heard from Shimon, the Lova, that I owe Reuven money, or alternatively, Ish Ploni Omar Li Shu Chayev Lo, I heard from someone else that he heard from Shimon that he owes money to Reuven, which is called Eid Mi Pi Eid. It's not direct testimony, it's indirect testimony. Lo Omar Klum. Now, in the second case, I understand Lo Omar Klum, this is not valid testimony because he's quoting somebody else and he didn't see anything, he didn't hear anything. But in the first case, what's the problem? Why is it a disqualified testimony when he says, he told me I owe him money? And that's going to bring us to the whole sugya of what's called meshata nibach. That if a person says, I owe money to someone, that's not a valid confession, and that's not binding. He could always say later on, I wasn't serious about it. Okay, we're going to get to that again. I'm just giving you a little bit of a preview. Ad sheyomar, what does the aid have to testify? What is the exact nature, the substance of his testimony? Bifanenu hodolo shu chayevlo masayim zuz. And the Gemara is going to say that the word bifanenu, which literally means in our presence, means that he, we'll call him Shimon, the lovet, appointed us, invited us to testify that he, Shimon, confesses that he owes Reuven 200 zuz. That's the bifanenu. Bifanenu means what we call yichud eden. You have to designate the witnesses. And the witness has to say, he, this Shimon, this Lovet, designated us as his two witnesses on the hodah, on his confession that he owes 200 zuz to Reuven. The achakach, now we finish with the first aid, right? The first witness, which is the Gadol Shebehem. And now we introduce the second witness. Achakach machnis hasheni bodkin. So again, we check him and we examine him the same way. Nimtzu divrehem mechuvanim, nosim v'nosim bedavar. Okay, what's divrehem mechuvanim? Literally, it means that they're saying the same thing. But the Gaon says, the Vilna Gaon, just the opposite. Divrei Mechuvanim means that the final outcome, the bottom line, so to speak, of both of them are identical. But it doesn't mean that they told exactly the same story. And the Vilna Gaon was of the opinion, again, I'm not posketing here, this has to be studied very carefully, that if the two Edim say exactly the same thing word for word, we know that they're false Edim, that they were in collusion with each other. So mechuvanim, says the Gaon, doesn't mean im divrayim osam dvarim. Then it doesn't say that they said the dvarim exactly the same. No, it's mechuvanim. Mechuvanim means they come to the same conclusion. And then Bezdin, after they accepted the testimony, and they see that at least the testimony is reliable, nosim and also then they have to deliberate, they have to come to the conclusion whether or not, based on testimony, the halacha is in favor of the malvil, let's say, in case. For, like, I'll give you an example. They may find that these two witnesses are telling the truth, and that Shimon actually borrowed a 200 zuz from Reuven, but it could be that he paid him back. Do you follow? So they have to still deliberate. The witnesses give them the basis for the deliberation, but there's still a long ways to go, and the judges have to decide. Now what happens, how do we, from a Beis Din, again, how many judges are on the court? We've mentioned this many times. Three. So how do we decide, how is the verdict chal? How is it binding? Shnayim omrim zakai ve'echad omer chayv. Shnayim omrim chayv ve'echad omer zakai means majority rules chayv. If two out of the three say that Reuven has to pay, excuse me, that Shimon has to pay Reuven, then Shimon has to pay. If two out of the three say zakai, that Shimon does not have to pay, he doesn't have to pay. Oh, but what happens? Echad omer chayv ve'echad omer zakai. So we have one against one, and the third judge doesn't have an opinion in this case. Afilu shnayim mizakim or shnayim mechayv. What happens if two out of the three say that he's either zakai or he's chayv? But echad omer, the third dayan, says eini yodea. I couldn't come to any conclusion. So now we have a built-in majority. And you and I would have said, if we have a majority, who cares if the third dayan doesn't have an opinion? No matter what his opinion is, it's totally irrelevant. No. The Mishnah says we need a decision of three dayanim, and no less than three. And therefore, yosifu ha-dayanim, they have to add dayanim to the court. And the word dayanim is in what? Plural. So it means you have to add a minimum of two dayanim. Now that's very strange. Why not add just one dayan, just to replace the third dayan who doesn't have an answer? The answer is that he still has rights to come to a decision. And if he comes to a decision and you added one dayan, now you have four judges. You could never have a bezin shakel of an even number. You always need an odd number. So therefore, we have to add two judges. We add two judges to the three judges, and we're left with five judges.
So the whole trial is not over, like a mistrial. I have to do all the testimony again for the new judges. They have to hear the whole case again.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. I didn't think about
it. How many judges can they have? How many times can they do this?
I think it's endless, as far as I know. Gabru es hadavar. Now again, all this takes place in the absence of the litigants. Now they came to a decision. Hayamachnisin osan, they invite the litigants to come and hear the final decision. Hagadol shebadayonim omer, the head judge will declare ish ploni, let's say Reuven, or let's say Shimon in this case, because Shimon we call the lover, ato zaka, you don't have to pay, or ish ploni, or Shimon, ato chayev, you have to pay. Now it's very interesting that the Balei Dinim know absolutely nothing about the deliberations. They just get the final decision. And I don't know if you ever heard of the Beis HaLevi, Rabbi Yosher Ber Briska. That was my father, my Rebbe's great grandfather. So he's famous for saying the following. He said that he had two cases. One was a monetary case, and he judged it. And when he handed out his decision that Shimon has to pay, so Shimon went berserk and he started screaming and he started cursing him out. You're no goodnik. You're not a true judge. You're not honest. A few minutes later, a man comes in with an animal. And he asks Rav Yosher Ber if it's kosher or if it's treif. And Rav Yosher Ber checks it and this. He comes to the conclusion that it's treif. It was a loss of 500. The first din was about 100. It was relatively... And the guy takes his animal and he goes out and he sells it to a guy or whatever he does with it. He doesn't say a peep. So Rav Yosher Ben asked, why in the first case is he yelling at me and cursing me out? And in the second case, he's makabel besimcha, and he goes ahead and he takes a loss of hundreds and hundreds of dollars and it doesn't bother. He says the following: in the first case, I paskin ploni chayavato. The psak is on ploni. You see the Mishnah's language. It says, ish ploni ata chayav. It means that with all your claims and all your counterclaims, you are chayav. That is a personal affront. But in the case of the treifa, he just says the animal is treif. So that's not a reflection on me. You know, I have a non-kosher animal. That's it. There's a lot of depth to that. You have to think of it.
It's not the money in the first case. The money wasn't the problem.
That's it. You know, the money is very insignificant. You know, it could be the whole din Torah was on a pruta. But it doesn't matter. I'm going to still get angry at the dayan. Why? Because you told me ploni ata chayav. Oh boy, that's an insult. Now let's say after the judges leave the room, and you know the judge feels very badly about the decision against Shimon. If he says atachayev, so he wants to whisper in his ear, ani mezake. I really was the one judge on this court that was so in favor of you. The chavera mechayev, but I was outnumbered. He says, avolma esse shechavere. But I was in the minority, right? In the silent minority. He says, no, al zenemar lo selech rachil pamecha holech rachil megalis sod. It's osur al pidin, maybe even a doraisa, to reveal which of the dayanim came to which conclusion. It has to be presented as if it were a unanimous decision. In other words, anonymity has to be guaranteed. The Gemara says the following: Hey Chaminali, how do we spook out the Eidim? How do we scare them? Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that we quote a pasuk in Mishlei that tells us that the rains are not going to fall from the heavens if witnesses perjure themselves. Nisim, there are winds that are carrying Veruach, and there's plenty of wind, but Vegeshem Ayin. Why? Says the Poskos, Ish Mishalel B'matas Sheker, because it's Sheker. Sheker Mishalel means he gives himself a pat on the back because he wants to make sure that his good buddy Shimon will receive a gift meaning he doesn't really deserve this money, and this witness testifies on behalf of Shimon. Again, if he had the money, this witness would have dug, you know, he would have dug into his own pocket and give the money. But he doesn't have the money to give a gift to his best friend. So what does he do? He purges himself in a court and he gets money from Nebuch Ruvain illegally to give it to Shimon. And the Pasuk says, in such a case, Geshem Ayin, there won't be any rain. Amalei Rava says the aid is not going to be impressed by that. Why? Yochli Lememar, he could say to himself, Shav Shnei, 7 years of famine, Havi Kafna, the Abava Umna Lo Chalif. There are certain people who are guaranteed a parnosan income. They don't depend upon agriculture, whether it rains or it doesn't rain. You pay a craftsman, he creates something, and you have to pay him. I won't be affected by the lack of rain. In other words, the aid is not impressed by this eum, by this scare. El Omar Rava, he quotes a different pasuk, also in Mishlei, and he says the following: Mefitz v'cherev v'chetz shanun. There's going to be terrible destruction. A club, a sword, a sharp arrow. And why? Says the pasuk, "Kosh ish ona bereyu ein sheker," because a person testifies falsely against his friend. So he's predicting that for the avera of eidus sheker, there's going to be a terrible repercussions. Amalei Ravashi says that's not going to impress the aid. Yeholi lemar, he can say to himself, Again, he's not going to say this out loud, but he's going to say to himself, Shev Shnei Avi Masna. There's a 7-year plague in this case. Masna means death. But the Inish Belo Shanya Lo Shachiv. A person doesn't die until the time that's designated for his death comes about. So he's very confident that he's not going to die. El Amar Avashi.
Or if he is going to die, he's going to do about it.
Right, he's not going to die as a result of his false testimony. He's going to die because that's whenever he's supposed to die, you know, destiny is going to come. The Malach HaMavis comes on the day that he's supposed to come. So we have to find a different method of scaring the aid. This next Gemara is very, very profound. El Amar Avashi. He has a Kabbalah from Nosan Bar Marzutra. Amrina, you know what we say to the Edim? Sahadi Shakri Aogarayu Zile. Agorayu, Agra is payment. They're falsely, they're paid by someone, hired by someone to perjure themselves. And Agorayu are those who pay them. Sadi Shakri, false Edim, Zile means are despicable in the eyes of those who pay him. I'm going to explain this in just a minute, but let's just see how Ravashi derives this from a Pasuk. The Pasuk says, where is this Pasuk? I think it's in Tanakh. Oh, it's in Malachim. It says, it's very small here. Voshivu shnayim anoshim bnei Belial negdo vayidu lemar beirachtem elokim vamelach. Let's just read the English translation. He says, and let them place two corrupt men opposite him, and let them testify about him, saying, you have cursed God and the king. If you take a look, it says corrupt. It says Belial. That's a very negative description of someone. And we're talking about the people who actually hired the witnesses. So let me just say a word about Ravashi, Lefiyadi is Daiti. Ravashi is coming in with a whole different perspective. The way to impress a man to be inhibited about doing the wrong thing is not by scaring him, you know, with punishments and so forth and so on, but rather to show him how lowly is this crime that he's about to perform if we suspect him of doing so. When I say lowly, means in your own eyes you should realize how you're belittling yourself. A human being has a sense of self-respect, again, unless he's totally corrupt and totally sinful and sick. But a normal person has an image. He has to look himself in the mirror and he has to have a self-image. What we're telling the Edom is that this is the most despicable kind of crime. Even those who hired you consider you a lowlife. And therefore, how much respect can you have? You know, people back in the day, I don't know if you can relate to this, 100 years ago they used to tell the children that if they violate the Shabbos, they're going to be zapped on the spot, you know. And then they tried it, and nothing happened. You know, that's not the way to bring faith to a person. But if you, the Gemara says about Rabbi Yishmael that he used to read on Shabbos Li'or HaNer. You know, in the old days they had these receptacles and that oil, and it got all filthy. You know, from the lighting of the candle and the oil. So the Gemara says, how could Rabbi Shmuel read La'or HaNer? The Gemara says maybe he'll, you know, if the candle starts flickering, he'll be tempted to tip the Nair so that more Shemen will come down. So the Gemara says he's an Adam Chashuv. And if he's an Adam Chashuv, he won't do such a thing. He won't tamper with it with his fingers. So Rav Chaim Shulevitz is very famous as asking the Kasha, why did the Gemara say him Adam Tzadikhu? He won't be, he's a tzaddik, he wouldn't chas shalom think of violating Shabbos. He says, you know, if it's only tzidkus, he might forget. But chashivas, he'll never forget. If it's below his dignity, he would never do such a thing.
It's like the story you were saying about you Hashem. You say, you, same thing, the man doesn't want to be accused
by doing something shameful. Again, if he has any decent level of, minimum level of self-respect. Then the Mishnah says that if the Edim testify, Imhu Amarli, he told me that he owes money, that Shimon said he owes money to Shimon. No, that's not testimony, it's worthless. Achiyom b'fanenu hodolo shuchai, b'fanenu, means he appointed us as his witness, shuchai v'lo masai. Misayele Rabbi Yehuda, I don't know why the Gemara says Rav Yehuda. I would have said Rav. Anyway, the Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, Tzorech Sheyomer Atem Edai, that when a person confesses, that confession is only valid in a court of law if he appointed the witnesses as his witnesses. Atem Edai, you are my witnesses. Itmar Nami, and also we learned the similar halacha, Omer Rav Chiya Bar Abba, Omer Rav Yochanan, Mana li biyodcha. So Reuven comes and says, Shimon, you owe me a mana. Omar lo hein. And Shimon admits that he owes him. Yes, I do. Lemachar, tomorrow, when Reuven comes to collect, Omar lo tneu li. He says, okay, you admitted yesterday, now pay me off. Omar meshate ani bach. Are you familiar with this phrase? This is a very familiar phrase throughout Masechta Sanhedrin. And also Baba Basra, Mishata Nibach, I was just kidding with you. I wasn't serious about it. The Gemara accepts the fact that a confession outside of a court of law, even if it's in the presence of witnesses, but he didn't appoint these witnesses as his witnesses, Potter, that's not binding, because a person always has a right to say, I didn't mean it seriously. There are many, many different reasons why a person just wants to get someone off his back, or he wants to show other people that he doesn't have any money. So he says, yeah, I owe him money. But he wasn't serious about it. Tanya Nami Hachi, we learned also in a Braisa, money li biyadcha omelo hein. Yes, I owe you the money. Lamacha omelo tneili omelo mishatani bach. I was joking with you. My confession is not valid. I wasn't serious. Potter. Vlo odel afilu hichmin lo edim achori agoder. If Reuven was very clever here, so he hid witnesses. The amalo manali biyodcha amalo hein, and he said yes. Oh, so he says ritzoncha shetode b'fnei ploni uploni. In other words, we need atem edai, meaning we need the confessor to say, I accept these two edim. So the malveh, when he asked for the money, he says, and if there were edim here, would you admit? Again, he didn't see the edim. And he says, Amalo, misyari eni shema tachfeni lidim. I'm afraid to accept upon myself any testimony, because maybe tomorrow you'll sue me in a court of law. And lamach amalo tneuli, amalo mashatani bach potur. And the Brisa says that in such a case, he's allowed to deny the seriousness of his admission, and he doesn't have to pay, because he never accepted upon himself the two witnesses. And then the Brisa ends with three words, and this is for our Parsha, Parshas Re'eh. It's not coincidental, Rav Osai, that we're learning the Daf Yomi in Parshas Re'eh, v'ein to'anim le'mesis, the Parsha of Mesis, someone who allures his friend to worship an idol, and he has to be put to death for that. Ain toanim lemesis. Okay, we'll see what that means. Mesis mandekar shmei. The price is not talking about mesis. All of a sudden, ain toanim lemesis. Chisuri mechzer v'achitoni. There's a paragraph missing in this price. Im lo toan. Let's say Reuven. I'm sorry. Let's say Shimon when he comes to Bezdin. He doesn't say Meshat Anibach. He admits that he made the confession, and there may even be witnesses that. And he doesn't say Meshat Anibach, I wasn't serious. Ain't toin him love. And we're not going to put that plea into his mouth. Ubedini nefashos. That's only in monetary cases, but in capital cases, then afal gavdolo ton taininale. There's a principle called psach picha le'ilam that we have to open up a person's mouth in dine nefashos. And even if he didn't put forth a plea, maybe he wasn't thinking that he really does have a claim that could exonerate himself. So we put it forth on his behalf. But ain toanim lemesis. In a case of somebody who allures his friend, he seduces his friend to worship an idol, then we don't put any claims out there on behalf of the mesis. And if the mesis cannot defend himself with his own claim, he'll be put to death. Maishna Mesis, why is Mesis so severe that we don't put forth any claim on his behalf? Omer Rav Chama Bar Chanina, the Pirkei de Rab Chanina, the Rab Chanina bar Abba Shmili. I heard this in the name of Rab Chia, Shani Mesis, the Rachmona Omer, lo tachmol, velo tach, techasa olav. In this week's parashah it says, have no mercy and don't protect the Mesis. Omer Rab Shmuel bar Nachman, Omer Rab Yonason, minayin shein toanim le Mesis. I think what the Gemara means here is that even though we don't have to have any rachmanis on a mesis, that means we have to put him to death without feeling any compassion for him. But how do you know we can't put forth an argument on his behalf, a plea that will let him off the hook and save his life? Minochash HaKadmoni. Again, the Nochash HaKadmoni seduced Chava to eat from the Eitz HaDatz. The question is why that's relevant to a mesis. That's not an avera of Avodah Zarah. The Yomar Rav Simloi Harbe Tainos Hoyolo Lenochash Liton Veloton. There are claims that the Nochash could have put forward on his own behalf, and we're not going to put him. God is not going to put those claims to defend the Nochash because he's a Mesis. Mipnei Maloton Lo Kodesh Baruch Hu Lefish Loton Hu. Since he the Nochash didn't put forth this claim, God doesn't put forth on his behalf because he's a Mesis. Now the reason why the Mefarshim say that the Nochash is a Mesis is because it says the Nochash says to Chava Vayisem Kelokim, you'll be like a god, you'll be like God himself. You know, you'll replace God as if there's another force on earth that could replace God. That's Avodah Zarah. My Havile Lameva, what argument could we put forth in favor of the Nochash? Divya Rav, Divya Talmud, Divya Mishomim, okay. I seduced Chav and I told her, hey, you know, it's worth it. Why not give it a shot and try the Eitz HaDaas? But, you know, she knows that she heard from God, I mean, through Adam, that she's not allowed to eat from the Eitz HaDaas. Who is she meant to listen to? She listens to me or she listens to the Rebbe? Right, that's called Ein Shliach L'Dvaver. It's Divya Rav Shomim. She should have been, you know, you can't blame the Nochash here. At the end of the day, she had her own decision-making power. Omer Chizkia, now that we're on the subject of the Eitz HaDaas, Minayin Shekol HaMosif Goreh, how do we know that if you add something to what the Rebbe tells you, then that's not a good idea? Shenemar, Omer Elokim L'Tochlu Menu V'Lo Sigubo. In other words, the Chava, when she replies to the serpent, she says, I'm not even allowed to touch it. Now, Hashem never said she couldn't touch the Eitz HaDaas. And she went ahead and she said, well, God said, shouldn't touch it. As a result, he pushed her and she touched it. Nothing happened. So then she was already sucked in. When the Torah says that the length of the Aron is Amasayim V'chetzi. That's very interesting. If you drop the Aleph of Amasayim, it's Masayim V'chetzi. So the Aleph drops it. So you added a letter and you reduce its size. Or Ravashi says the other pasuk that refers to the Yerios of the Mishkan, the curtains. It says Ashtei Esrei Yerios. Again, if you take off the Ayin, then it's Shtei Esrei Yerios. There are 12 curtains, but the Ayin, because you added it, reduces it down to 11 Yerios. So Kol HaMosif Goreah, by adding, you reduce, you lower the number. Omar Abai Lo Shanu Ela Di Omar Meshata Nibach. When do we say that the testimony against the person's confession invalidates the confession? That's if he says Mishata Nibach, I was joking with you, Avol Omar. But if he says, here we look on Chavtes Amid Beis, Lo Hayu Dvar Mi'olam, we have testimony against him to the effect that he confessed and he denies that he made the confession. Huchza Kafron, in such case we can no longer trust him because we have two witnesses that proved that he said he falsified his claim. And if he wants to take a Shvua, we're not going to believe his Shvua. And in another situation, if he denies that he confessed, we're not going to believe his denial. He's already established himself as a kafron. That's the first opinion of the Gemara. The second opinion of the Gemara is no. Omer Rav Papa Brei the Rav Acha Barad Ahok Yamir Shmei the Rav. This is what I heard in the name of Rava. Kol Mili Dibichdi Lo Dechire Inshi. A person doesn't remember things that are not significant, and since he knows that his original confession is not binding, that's called mili dichdi. That's insignificant, and therefore lo zchiri a person doesn't remember it, right? The Dalet in Aramaic replaces the Zion in Lashon Kodesh. So it's lo zchirei inshi. A person doesn't remember it. So the fact that he denied that he made the claim, that he made the confession, that doesn't mean anything. A person puts it out of his mind. He doesn't remember it. Reuven, the Malveh, hides Eidim behind the curtains. Kilte means curtains. Amalei comes to Shimon. He says, "Mana li biyadcha, you owe me a mana amalei hin." And he admits that he does Omar. Are you willing to accept upon yourself not only Eidim that are awake, but even Eidim who are asleep? And he thought that at that point he would say, what difference it makes whether the Eidim are awake? There's no Eidim here because he didn't see the Eidim. Amalei lo, but he said, no, I'm not willing to accept upon Eidim because I'm not serious about my confession. Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana says, Amalei lo, he never accepted the Eidim, and therefore his confession is not valid. He has a right to say, Mishata nibach, Ahudi achmin Eidim bekivre lachavre. He took his friend, Reuven took his friend Shimon to a graveyard, to a cemetery, and he hid Eidim somewhere in the graveyard. He demands payment and he says, yeah, I owe you the money. Are you willing to accept upon yourself both the living and the dead as witnesses? He says, no. Rav Shimon, it's the whole discussion in the Mefarshim, what the Chiddush is. He said, no, he wasn't accepting the Eidim. We said he has to say Atem Eidai. Omer Avina, Vitema Rav Papa, Shma Mina, Meha, Hadi Omer, Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, Tzarek Shiyomer Atem Eidai. These stories prove the statement of Rav Yehuda, the name of Rav, that unless the confessor, in this case the Lova, says, Atem Eda, you are my Edim, it's not a valid binding confession. Loshna ki omar Lova. And it doesn't matter whether it was the Lova who said it. Loshna ki omar Malva vishosikle. Right? It doesn't matter whether the Lova, meaning Shimon who owes the money, was the one who said Atem Edai, or even the Malva who's demanding the payment. He could say, these are the Edim in this case. And if he says these are going to be the Eidim, you owe me money, and the Lova says nothing, then we apply the principle of Shtika Kodai. He accepted upon himself the Eidim. Taima Diomar Lova Lo. Only when the Lova says, no, I'm not willing to accept the witnesses. Avali Shase Kachinami. If he says nothing, then it's considered that tacitly he accepts the witnesses. Hahu Dahava Karile Kav Rishu. There was a nickname, an appellation that they gave to a person, Kav Rishu. He owes so many debts. Kav, you can fill up all the debts, you know, all the documents in a Kav, which is a massive volume. Omar, so the person that they called Kav Rishu, he says, Man Masik B, who has rights to collect money from me? Ela Ploni Ploni. Only two people. So Asa Tavu Lidina Kamei Rav Nachman. So those two people, they heard that he had made a confession. They came to demand payment. On Rav Nachman, Adam Asui Shalola Hasbia Es Atzmo. The person doesn't want to show that he is wealthy, so sometimes he confesses that he owes money to people, so nobody should bother him thinking that he's rich. But the chiddush of Rav Nachman is that even though he denied all the other chovos and he only admitted these two, nevertheless, that itself is not a serious admission. Hahudavi karule akbarha deshakiv adinre. If you have a mouse who's hiding coins under his body, those coins are worthless for him. And they describe this person as a mouse who sleeps on dinrim, meaning he's a person who doesn't benefit at all from his money. Never, he's diseased. He's really wealthy, but he doesn't enjoy the wealth. Kikos shachiv, on his deathbed, Omar, he declared, planyu planyu maski bey zuzi, I owe money to so and so. Basar the shachiv, after he died, asu tavinu liyarshim, the two people who he mentioned came to demand payment from the Yarshim, came to demand payment from the Yarshim. I'm sorry. those two people who were mentioned came to demand payment from the Yoshim. Also, Lakami, the Rabbi Yeshua, the Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Amalahu, Ki Amrin and Adam Asli Shalolas Bias Atz. Where do we say that a person wants to show others that he's not wealthy and therefore he, without being serious about it, he says, I owe money, Hani Mili Mechain, that's only if he's alive. Amaliachar Misa Lo, but once he's about to die, what does he care one way whether or the other, whether he appears wealthy or no? And therefore, Pare, therefore you have to pay him. In other words, the Yoshim have to pay back the money. That was the psak of whom? Of Rabbi Ishmael. What did they do? Pare palga. So the Yoshim paid up half the amount. Tavina ledina leidach palga. So now the Balei Din came to judgment. They went to Osel Kamid Rabbi Chiya, a different Beis Din, and they wanted to get the other half. Amalahu, and he ruled Kishem Shodam Osi Shalolas Bia as Atzmo, just like a person doesn't want to appear during his lifetime as if he's rich, and therefore he may say, well, I owe money to so and so. Kach Adam Osi Shalolas Bia as Bonav, he's also concerned about his children. He doesn't want people to think that his children inherited a massive amount of money. So even on his very deathbed, he may confess that he owes money to someone, but he's really not serious. Nu, Amru Le, so they said, Nazel Vinahadr, these two people who came to, in front of Rabbi Chiya were very honest people. Should we go back and now return to the Yarshim, the first half that was passed by Rabbi Ishmael? Amaluhu Kfar Hora Zaken. Rabbi Ishmael had already given his psak, and therefore the money is yours. We're not going to undo and invalidate the original psak of Rabbi Ishmael. And here there's a whole to-do in the poskim about a sugya earlier in Masechta Sanhedrin. What's the law if a judge makes a mistake in judgment? Now, according to Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Ishmael's logic that the confession of a person at his deathbed is absolutely binding is incorrect. So now Rabbi Ishmael should have to pay up for any loss that the Yoshim suffered as a result of his incorrect psak. Now that is going to be a whole discussion in the poskim, that this is not considered a Torah B'dvar Mishnah, it's a Torah B'shikol Hadas. Again, that's a very sugya unto itself. Okay, then we'll stop.